from the pages of rpmnewsweekly.com, the site that brings you automotive news that goes behind the headlines. This is the RPM News Weekly podcast.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Kia EV podcast. My name is Peter. With me, as always, is Rich Tabor.
Howdy.
Howdy. Did I throw you off there? Because I decided not to go with RPM News Weekly podcast. I went the Kia podcast because it seems like we're turning into a Kia EV podcast after last week. And a matter of fact, this is sort of a follow-up to our auto show coverage from the last podcast, talking about Kia. The only automaker that we're seeing positive EV news out of is Kia Hyundai. And also it ties into the fact that you are currently driving a Kia, if you want to give us a quick just preview of that.
Yeah, that's right. I had an opportunity to drive the all-gas version of the Kia Sportage, 2026 Kia Sportage. It was an X-Pro Prestige, which is basically at the top of their lineup. And we got a good comparison with some of their hybrid and plug-in hybrids. And I think that'll make some sense. But we got other places to go first, right?
So we're going to talk, just get into the whole news that's coming out this week about them and a little bit about Ford. I'll start with the Ford just because it's a quick mention. There was a story, I think Jalopnik reposted it, and I think it came from the Wall Street Journal about Ford went to the White House and said, you guys are killing us on tariffs, because they started building EVs and then they went, oh, well, we didn't want to build EVs the minute that Trump became president. But the problem is with Ford, their best sellers, which are the F-150 and of course the F-250, 350, 450 on the commercial side, they're all aluminum bodies, and that aluminum is killing Ford right now with price. I think it's 25% tariff on aluminum right now. So I don't know what the logic there is. They're like, well, we're not going to do EVs. We're going to just concentrate on our trucks, but they're getting creamed on the trucks. So they're losing so much profit, and that's their bread and butter. That's just,
Right. Something's got to give.
Right. And, you hate to get into politics. I don't want to talk about politics on a car podcast, but it's just so prevalent. We have to talk about it.
Yeah, it's front and center.
Right. And now there's rumors and leaks that GM and Ford might get into producing military equipment. And I think that's sort of, in my opinion, I think that's kick for playing along with the Trump's revision on EVs. I think that's.
Yeah, the political agenda there, right?
And again, and then the second story, as I mentioned, we were talking about GM vehicles being put on ice, as they put it. I was reading a story from GM Dash Truck Forum, which is run by a friend of ours from the New England Motor Press. There's been a leak from, I guess it came from a supplier. Originally, the story came from Automotive News. A supplier leaked that GM is going their e-programs on ice. Their EV development program. So they had a wave of EV trucks that was supposed to follow the current versions.
Right, the Silverado and Sierra.
Yeah, and the Hummer.
Yeah, and the Hummer, right.
And they were set to, kind of like be the follow-up to these, along the same lines as Ford. Ford was in the middle of developing a new EV truck to replace the Lightning or maybe sell alongside of it. But apparently they're putting that on hold. So that they've decided that, they pushed it out to 2030. Supposedly it's not going to affect the trucks that are out now, which the Sierra EV and the Silverado EV, they're actually excellent trucks. And it's a shame that people are sort of, I don't want to say rejecting them, maybe based on cost because they are expensive, but people aren't embracing them as much as I had hoped they would, because they're very versatile. I like the setup. It's set up like the old Chevy Avalanche, where it has the mid gate that can open. So it's a lifestyles truck, but it could also be used as a work truck. So I just want to say, my take on it is, again, going political, I think they're just going to try to wait out the Trump administration. That's my guess. Because notice it was supposed to come out in 2028. Now it's magically pushed to 2030. So who knows what'll happen in the, 2 years. Who's president in 2030? Who's going to run, which side? Is it going to be Democrat or Republican? My take on it, they're just going
to
push it off.
Well,
Yeah.
Some of it is, it's hard to avoid it as being a political type of thing that's going on. And we kind of know that, you know, in the center of most of the politics is always economic issues. And that seems to be what's going on here. But the thing is that there seems to be a gross amount of manipulation of public opinion and what is actually necessary for, you know, to be a favorable position in the economy. Where GM and Ford, I think, maybe have played the game too hard or too closely is that they have kind of turned their nose up at the idea of producing electric vehicles in this particular stance, but it puts them at a disadvantage, if even if they're thinking that they're going to be doing it sometime down the road when the political winds change, that they're leaving themselves high and dry while other places in the automobile world, other countries, other manufacturers are surging ahead. And Kia is a good example, which we'll get to in a minute. And their sales are beginning to really show that difference too. So it's almost shameful that they've gotten so close, such close ties with what's going on, which is this a real belligerent and bold attempt to quash the EV market on all sides. And they seem to be playing along for now. Time will tell whether or not that was to their advantage.
I don't think it will be. I think that Ford and GM don't focus on the global market anymore, or they're not focused on like where the reality of the rest of the world is. Yeah, the Trump administration doesn't want EVs. They're actively trying to, you know, squash, as you mentioned, anything that's related to green energy. But the world is not giving up. So yeah, Kia EVs might be down. They're down, you know, towards the end of last year, all EV sales across the board in the U.S. were down. But as you mentioned, they are surging around the world. They had a first quarter of the year, their sales were up 54% worldwide, and they're not stopping. So they're not stopping development just because of what's going on in the United States. And that's the advantage they have, is that they have this giant market around the world that they're, you know, access to these markets that they're starting to develop. And you've got, like I said, the Kia we talked about last week, the Kia EV3, which debuted at the New York Auto Show. Out in Europe, they have the EV5 and of course the PV5. And they're still supporting that around the world. And a matter of fact, in some countries, the irony is, and Australia is an example of this, because of what is going on in the world and what they're doing in the Middle East, what the administration is doing in the Middle East, it's actually causing EV sales, particularly used EV sales, to blow up. And in Australia, they're now talking about a possible 80%, you know, EV market share by 2030, just because of fuel prices. So the same administration that's working its ass off to stop EVs is actually helping them now, because they're putting fuel sales into chaos. And I think that, I mean, my take on it is, I think the used EVs going up in sales and that market starting to boost up, I think it just shows that people do want EVs. They just, the pricing, as we always come back to, I think the pricing.
Well, you know, there's the, you know, the nut of all of this is that while from the information that I've received is that the EV sales were down year over year, they actually increased in the first quarter, showing over 20% month over month. So it kind of, that's an indication that that market is beginning to stabilize again. But what's maybe more of a bellwether is that the used EV sales, they actually experienced growth in year over year sales by over 25%, upwards of 28%. And their month over month sales in March were 53% to 54%. That's amazing. You know, I mean, so to me that information is kind of often neglected, that the used market seems to be, have not suffered the same losses as a new market had last year. But even there, the new market is beginning to show some stabilization. That's kind of interesting. So, and Kia is right at the top of the performers, you know, as far as their sales increases. They've benefited the most from this.
Yeah,
it
and
seems.
Now we're just getting reports now from Car and Driver that Kia has actually lowered the entry cost of the EV6, because there's been some you know, speculation as to what the fate of the EV6 and even the EV9 will be in the United States. And but now they're actually lowering the entry cost of the EV6 down to 39. I think it's like 39,445. So just say under $40,000. So that's positive. That's like, I think, $5,000 less than it was in 25. And that's probably no coincidence when you look at, you know, what the EV incentives were that are now gone. I'm sure that's, you know, not an accident that they wanted to kind of match that. Even though, like I said last week when we were talking about it, Kia never did get the full EV incentives here in the States. And I think this shows, as I mentioned before, I think that this shows that Kia can be aggressive and afford to lose money on these things. Unlike the domestic manufacturers here who are really in trouble, and then they're trying to fall back to, as I mentioned at the start, like Ford, they're trying to fall back to their bread and butter trucks, but they're still getting hit on that end. So, you know, that's where Kia is safe from all this craziness.
Yeah, all this juggling around. Right. Well, you know, the interesting thing too is that if you look at this dynamic, what you're beginning to see with the being forced into less reliance on subsidies for the vehicles, that the automakers themselves are beginning to price their cars a little bit differently as a consequence. And so I think that bears, you know, that will entice consumers to look a little bit more closely at EVs. You couple that with, of course, the, you know, the fluctuations in the price of gasoline, and you know, it bodes well for EVs in this coming year. And it's there's so many ironies there to see how, you know, trying to manipulate the market too closely sometimes backfires, you know, unintended consequences. And I think this is a really good example of that. So we'll see. I think everyone kind of knows that we need to do something about the amount of air pollution that's being caused by petrol-fueled cars. It's kind of hard to back away from it because of how deep it is into our economy, you know, as far as everything we do, getting to work, getting to the supermarket, getting the kids to soccer games. You know, that it's so embedded into our culture at this point that, you know, making the change is going to take time, and it's going to take a lot of energy, personal growth energy, I guess you'd call it, rather than you know, energy as in the big E energy, although it will take a lot of that, but shifting from one source to another it's not going to be easy, that's for sure.
Right, and we were on that track, but you said that everybody knows, but I think there's one guy who doesn't get the point, and also does what they can to protect the
petroleum industry. Yeah,
right. And you know, it kind of, we're going back to, you know, beginning of EVs in the United, you know, the resurgence of EVs in the United States. It's like, well, the oil industry. Well, now we've gotten to see what the oil industry will do to stop this unchained when they have, you know, the free reign to do whatever they want. But you know, again, I don't want to dwell on the negatives of politics.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, there's a couple of things I want to mention that are interesting in that same vein, but to try to steer away from just as a strictly political thing, is that I grew up in a city that was once the whaling capital of the world, and that was what people did at that time. You know, went out to sea for years at a time, killed hundreds and thousands of whales, brought it back and right on board that they would convert the blubber into oil. They were basically like factory ships in of that day and age. And but that industry began to collapse. I mean, obviously it had a finite point at which you could deplete the oceans, and you know, you would just not be having success with that product from that source. And in the meantime, of course, petroleum was discovered in Pennsylvania, and so that gave birth to a whole new industry. So, you know, the fortunes of New Bedford, which at one time was per capita the most wealthy city in the world, the fortunes changed dramatically and had to shift over to some other ways of maintaining the population that was there at the city and just maintaining itself as a city. So, so there's change, and sometimes the change is painful and it takes a long time, and you have to kind of come up with creative ways of making sure that the folks that are hurt the most by it, which are generally the people who are on the lower ladders in the industry, that they have a way of going to in another direction, and to be really focused on how to do that. So that being said, when we start to look at some of these auto manufacturers that seem to be making the best of the situation, Kia being one that we've been talking about, but even sort of coincidentally, you've got Toyota. Their BZ series was showing significant gains, they are actually almost doubling in their year-over-year sales. So that's kind of interesting, because Toyota was a little bit opposed to the idea of going all electric, all in on electric, and they kind of stuck with mostly the hybrid models. But even there, it's almost like they're being told that this is a part of this automaking business and conversion over to electric power. Where they're probably very surprised by the success they've had with the BZ. It probably was not what they were thinking.
It's interesting, because we talked about this when we were talking about the New York Auto Show in the last episode. The irony of Toyota, who was dragging their feet the most as far as the foreign automakers go, they not only are partnering with these a bunch of different vehicles coming out on the Subaru end, and then of course Toyota, like you said, the BZ. The BZ is just kind of an interesting case study here, because for when it first came out, it wasn't well accepted, like laughed at, and then it went right into having like recall issues. I don't remember. I think like the tires were falling off, literally, of cars, and it just kind of sat there. And then this last round of refresh, they shortened the name from BZ4X to BZ, and they gave it, they gave it some updates, and I think they gave it a little bit better styling. They softened it up a little. Oh no, it's actually the Subaru side is like kind of softer, but the BZ is more tech looking. But now you have this, it's not just an increase, it's like an 80% increase in sales for that in the US. It's crazy how that car all of a sudden just came out of nowhere. Yeah. It started out as sort of a joke, it was just ignored, and now it's coming on strong. And Toyota, yeah, crossed the line.
Funny, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Now, when they say like sales surge and they say BZ, do they include the Solterra, which is the Subaru version?
I mean, if you look at it as a whole. Not what I'm seeing. Maybe the number you had, 80%, maybe that's including it, because what I'm seeing is that it was a doubling in year-over-year sales. So
so maybe. But but if you look at it on a whole too, this is not only great for Subaru, for Toyota, it's great for Subaru, because if they can bring costs down, this is the disadvantage that all these manufacturers have had. Tesla was allowed plenty of time because they had investors who were willing to lose money to bring costs down. And that's what Ford still doesn't understand. You got to sell cars to bring the cost down. It's just like any other technology. It's like cell phones, TVs, gas engines in cars. None of that stuff. Like, people kind of seem to think that gas engines started out of the Ford factory in 1901 or whatever, 200 horsepower and getting 40 miles per gallon. It took a lot of money and investment and time to get those, get efficiencies as to where they are. And they're still not even close to 100%. But when you look at, like I said, with any technology, you have to sell them, and it has to sell to the quote unquote rich people first. And then that works its way down. It's been like that with every single technology that's ever come out. So that's where it's kind of annoying, where these manufacturers don't have the patience, other than Tesla, but they had the investors who would keep putting money in. So when you look at it, you've got the Toyota version of this, the Subaru version of this, and then of course the Lexus version of this, which is it the RZ? I can never remember. But the overall point is, you got to bring the cost down, and that's a positive. And maybe Toyota will go, oh well, maybe there is something here.
Yeah, well, globally, the projections that I'm reading are saying that a quarter of the market share will, in 2025, the EVs will have reached a quarter of the market share. That's globally. I don't think they'll be close to that in the United States at this point. But globally, that's pretty significant when you start to think about how fast and how quickly that has changed just in the last 5 years. So, hey, you know, we've talked about Kia quite a bit, and I did have an opportunity to drive the all-gas version of the Sportage. There's also a hybrid versions of the Sportage, and this is 2026. I was in the Prestige X-Pro all-wheel drive, and that's kind of, you know, there's a really great comparison to go to with that. You know, the vehicle itself on its own, not referencing necessarily just the powertrain, but, you know, referencing it, you know, from a comfort and convenience point of view, the X-Pro Prestige is sitting up at the top of the lineup pretty much for Kia. And a very comfortable car. You know, it's loaded with all the conveniences that you typically would want these days if you were going for, you know, top-end car. Of course, all the safety features, you know, that you go all around the car. You've got buzzers and bells and things and going on. Lighting, you know, to warn you about oncoming cars or approaching objects or cars coming up from behind or across behind you. So, you know, it's very tech-oriented, has lots of features. You've got, obviously, all the comfort of heated seats and heated steering wheel, if you want to have a head-up display. So there's all those things that are available out there on the car. I was not that impressed, though, with the powertrain. What I found mostly is that, you know, not that so much that it was underpowered, but it didn't have a lot of, like, reserve there when you were out on the highway and you wanted to pass. It seemed like that engine was just, you know, kind of made a lot of a racket, but you didn't really feel like a you know, like a bolt of lightning kind of hit the car to accelerate you. And that was kind of disconcerting. And, you know, you add that to the idea that it's not very efficient. You know, that if you take a look across the whole gamut of the Sportage, you're much better off going with one of their hybrids in terms of, not only in terms of economy, but even in terms of performance. So the one that I was driving, the X-Pro Prestige all-wheel drive, its combined fuel economy rating is 24, which is, you know, average for that, you know, for that size vehicle and in petroleum, you know, petroleum only type of performance. But you know, if you kind of go up, just kind of going up through the lineup, and you know, I did mention before we got started today, a little bit of an interesting, whether it was deliberate or just kind of coincidental, you really have to scroll down the page. I mean, scroll and scroll and scroll and then scroll some more to just find out what the horsepower of these models are. And lo and behold, you will find it. And it turns out that the hybrid will deliver a lot more horsepower in a combined, you know, with combined gas and electric. And of course, the torque is up as well, and significantly. It's not just a few points here and there. And so then, if you switch over and say, "Well, okay, but you know, what's the comparison? You know, I'm going to pay a lot more money to go with the hybrid." You know, and that's not the case. Is, you know, they're probably within $1,000 of each other, but you'll be saving. The EPA estimates that if you go with the Sportage plug-in hybrid, you'd save $4,500 over the average uses of a new vehicle, whereas if you go with the one that I was in, the Sportage X-Pro all-wheel drive gasoline model, you're going to actually spend $1,750 more than the average new vehicle. So that spread there is, like, you know, $6,000, more than $6,000. So even if there was a significant price difference between them, you'd more than make up for it within 5 years in just the savings that you have. But there isn't a big price difference between them. You can, they both come in, clock in and around $40,000. So I think, you know, if I was really making the choice, I'd go with a hybrid Sportage. You know, I mean, so you've got the conveniences and everything else that you'd want to get, but you'd also be saving a lot of money.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. The X-Pro Prestige in this car, it's kind of like the sticker packages that you'd get on quote unquote performance Fords back in the 80s, right? I mean, it's you get the Torino with the stripes. Oh, that must be faster, but you get the same drivetrain and whatever. You don't get anything that really helps this off road in the X-Pro versus the regular X-Line, if I'm not mistaken, other than the tires, which are knob your tires. Now it's funny because your take on it is exactly what Car and Driver said. Matter of fact, they went a step further and they actually recommend, they said it's not a bad car. It's a great car. I mean, it's comfortable. It's got a lot of options and stuff, but the powertrain sort of undercuts what you get. And so they actually mirror what you're just saying. And they also go a step further and they basically say, well, you could buy a Sportage hybrid. Was it X line? And, it's funny. This is, I'll give you the exact wording actually. So working from the EBA combined fuel numbers and assuming gas at $3 a gallon, which that's out the window, a Sportage hybrid will save you about $800 on fuel over the first 2000 miles. Coincidentally, a set of 235, 65, 17 BF Goodrich all-terrain TAs cost little more than $800. Throw those on, and you've got the X-Pro look on a Sportage hybrid.
Yeah,
they literally are mirroring what you said, which is funny because so you're not alone in that take. You could buy the hybrid or even the plug-in hybrid, and you can put some bigger tires on it. You know, or not even bigger tires, just off-roady looking tires. But it is a great looking car. I don't mean to jump on the pylon, but I haven't driven it, so I don't know. And it's funny. It's sort of hard to forget that the Sportage is one of their entry levels. It's not the entry level, but it has always been like a lower cost vehicle. So you get a lot. It's amazing what you get on lower cost vehicles these days. As far as features go, and it comes back to what I was talking about before, where you have features have to work their way down the line. It's always been that way in automotive. Mercedes comes out with a bunch of features now. Everything in the base Toyota has everything a Mercedes would have 10 years ago, So.
Yeah, so it's so amazing to see that. Well, you made some references to the early Fords, like the very first, going back a century plus. They didn't even have windshield wipers, so that... I imagine that you had to buy the high end to get the windshield wipers when they finally were introduced.
And then they were vacuum operated, so they barely worked anyway. Or you had a crank. You had to crank it. Literally had to crank a little. That's exactly it. Stuff like that. I mean, headlights. You go back to headlights. You can't back them. There's a time the cars didn't even have them. They had little candles that you had to move the lamp at the light. And that or electric starters. Electric starters were, a big deal. And now, look, if you couldn't put out a car with electric starter today, you'd be laughed off the face of the earth. But technology has got to work its way through cost, and EVs are going to get there. And all the people who are that have been convinced that EVs are like the death of America somehow, I don't know. they're going to learn soon enough that they can't stop it. It doesn't make a difference because what's going to happen realistically, let's be realistically about the American market is Ford and GM and Stellantis, they're going to get killed by the Chinese EVs are going to come here and they think they're not, but they're going to because this administration is more than willing to let anybody who pays come in and do what they want. And all it's going to take is, a Chinese auto manufacturer giving Trump a shiny trophy and, promising a couple billion dollars in development. And you're going to have EV factories here from China. They're going to be building cars here. But also just even the manufacturers that are here, like Kia and Hyundai and Toyota, they're going to make they're going to bring costs down around the world and they're going to flood these cheaper EVs into the U.S. market. It's already starting. It's our Kia EV3 will be here. And that's going to bring costs down. And there's nothing that these car companies that are dragging their feet going, well, we're going to go build trucks again because that's what, Trump wants. So that's what the world wants. Well, it's going to be painful because it's going to be a sad reality for them. They're rushing to get, you know, Dodge is putting the V8 back in everything, you know, the Hemis, they're going the whole, like even the Wrangler is example, the 392 Wrangler, which I love, don't get me wrong, but you know, that was supposed to go away. And now they're like, bringing it back. And they might do another Hemi Charger, but where are those going to go with $5 gas? There's going to be a very sad reality for these automakers that
have... the writing seems to be on the wall. You know, you just got to read it.
Yeah, and if it's not going to be China, it's just going to be Korean or Japanese automakers. They're going to bring costs down around the world, and then they're going to sell these things cheaper here. And you know, the automakers are going to have nothing. They're going to have nothing to sell because people are going to go to cheaper, whether it be hybrid, plug-in hybrid, or EV.
Yeah, everyone wants to save money. That's for sure. Well, listen, you know, we've come up close to, I think, you know, our 30 minutes or so.
Yeah, past it, so. 32 to be exact.
All right.
So I guess we'll wrap it up there. I didn't want to end on a negative note, but, you know, it's getting better.
There is some light down the tunnel.
This thing's coming. I mean, look at, you know, we were going to talk about, I just want to mention the Kia Vision Meta Turismo. Terrible name, but good looking car. That's a concept that Kia is showing off in Milan this week. And then Hyundai has got the Ioniq V, but now they're talking mm-hmm. about it being a possible replacement for the Kia Stinger in the United States. So it's a sedan, it's EV, it's really tech, you know, heavy, you know, and it looks pretty sharp. And I mean that quite literally. It has a very sharp look to it.
Well, maybe that'll catch on. I once in a while see a Stinger out in the wild, but not a whole lot.
I like the Stinger. I think that was, they should have worked on that a little bit and did another generation. But the, you know, sedans don't sell or whatever. I don't know.
Oh yeah. That's so untrue.
I know. Well, look at, you know, even GM, they're talking about bringing back a Buick sedan. They're talking about bringing back the Camaro, possibly as a four door something. And then, you know, Cadillacs, they're going to go on with another generation of their sedans. But, you know, we'll look forward to hopefully covering those someday on the RPM News Weekly podcast. Okay. We'll have a recap of this episode up on rpmnewsweekly.com if you want to check it out up on the website. And we'll put pictures of the new Vision Meta, like, again, terrible name, and the Ioniq V, and as well as the your Kia Sporters that you have this week. And do you have any news on what you get next time? Is it going to be a Kia?
Not so sure. You know, the press cars are few and far between these days.
Well, hopefully it's something with a plug so we can talk about it. But all right, Rich, have a good afternoon. I'll see you next time.
Pleasure as always.
All right. Have a good day.
Thanks for joining us this week on the RPM News Weekly podcast. Don't forget to check us out online at rpmnewsweekly.com for more automotive news and interviews.